if we're struggling, don't point fingers. Let's figure out what we can do on our side to try to figure out how we can maximize this asset. Now you've got the confidence. If there is other hiccups, which there will be, there's ups and downs in any business that we play and anything that we're doing. But the next hiccup you have, you're going to be more likely to say, hey, what action can I take, instead of sitting there saying, oh, the market's bad. You know, things have changed. They told me it was going to be really bad in the summer and the fall. And you proved otherwise, right? You proved that, hey, listen, this can be a really attractive property.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and I'm really excited about a conversation we're about to have with Mr. Harmon. I appreciate you joining us, Harmon, and talking about your journey into short-term rentals and a property that has done very, very well. So I'm excited to dive into the details of your short-term rental investing journey. So thanks for joining us, Harmon.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to hear this introduction. I've heard it as a listener of the podcast a bunch of times, so good to be on the other side.
Nice. Awesome. Well, I'm excited about this conversation. I know your guys' story intimately. We've been a part of that process from the beginning, and so I'm excited for everybody to hear us. So, Harmon, as you know, I always like to, when we have these conversations, they're super casual, but we want to dive into the details of your investing journey. But let's take a step back and tell me, like, where you guys started and what got you interested ultimately into investing into short-term rentals.
We were investing in real estate for a few years. I think, yeah, you know, like a lot of people that got bit by the real estate bug, it's just a sense of wanting to have financial independence, wanting to have something tangible. You know, back in 2019, we started investing in long-term rentals out of state. So we started buying, you know, duplexes and fourplexes in Columbus, Ohio. You know, to be honest, like a lot of those were what you would call C-class properties. And so, like, you know, on paper, it seemed like they would cash flow really well. You know, we were sort of finding as we were like acquiring these properties that even if you fix them up, you know, you can kind of fix them up cosmetically, but like underneath, they're just like, you know, they're like, they're in the city of Columbus. They're like 100-year-old properties, and you can renovate them cosmetically, but they just have a lot of like underlying issues, not to mention sort of the tenant quality that you get, right? So we tried a number of different things, a number of different approaches. We tried doing some complete burrs, some gut jobs that were, you know, we were like, hey, there's no plumbing and electrical, so we'll just sort of make everything new. And that way we won't have issues with repairs and maintenance. Well, you know, you still have the same kind of tenants in those neighborhoods. So that kind of didn't work too well. Then we were like, well, let's upgrade the tenant quality. Let's turn every single unit that we had. So we got up to 18 units in Columbus, and we were like, let's turn every single unit as they become vacant, renovate them and make it a B-class product in a C-class neighborhood, and we'll get like the best tenants, right? You know, even after doing all of that, even after investing all of that CapEx, the juice kind of wasn't really worth the squeeze, right? I think, you know, as we kind of got into it, I look at real estate investing, especially these days, given how challenging it is, you know, the first few properties that you buy, those are just kind of your foot in the door, right? Like a couple of $100 cash flow. If you're making decent money, it's not really going to change your life. So you kind of have to think like, how is that going to scale, right? And so I kind of looked at those initial purchases as like a foot in the door with an eye towards maybe scaling towards larger multifamily buildings, you know, maybe syndications, something along those lines. But it never felt that exciting because what I sort of saw is even if you're going to like a 100-unit building, you know, you might be able to scale that better, but you're still going to be kind of managing the bottom line, right? Because your top line is kind of fixed. And so you're really just trying to manage your operational expenses and keeping those as low as possible and hoping you net out on profit. But I've always been sort of the person that's more focused on the top line. Like if you grow the top line enough, the bottom line will kind of take care of itself, right? So I explored the syndication path, sort of, you know, kicked around the idea of joining a couple of masterminds for syndications, but it just sort of wasn't speaking to me. And so, yeah, that's where short-term rentals kind of called. And actually, the thesis for getting into short-term rentals initially wasn't the traditional short-term rental model. It was just thinking about, hey, real estate, the benefit really comes from holding these properties long-term, right? And so what can we do to acquire properties that are solid properties in solid neighborhoods where it doesn't take that much to manage them and we can just hold those for a long period of time? So it was actually thinking about like, hey, can we go into like the nicer suburbs of Columbus and buy a property? We can self-manage it. You know, if those are like nicer properties, if those are like B, you know, A minus sort of suburbs, you can self-manage. Hopefully it's a lot easier because the tenant quality is a lot higher. And so then from there, it was like, well, if we're already going to be self-managing as long-term rentals, why not self-manage as short-term rentals? And so that's kind of like how this whole thing came about. It was actually a little bit indirect, and it wasn't kind of like the traditional vacation rental model that pulled us in.
Nice. Yeah. And that's why I'm really excited to dive into the details of your guys' story, because you're a very astute investor. You're really paying attention to the numbers. You're looking, you mentioned in that, you know, kind of what led you into it. A lot of different things that a lot of people aren't paying attention to is like, what is that top line potential, right? And where is the cap on that potential? What is it going to take to get there? What is, like you said, is the juice worth the squeeze? And what are the asset classes that are going to help me maximize my long-term and ultimate goals? And you also mentioned having an asset that long-term goes up in value, and being able to invest in more quality areas, quality products are what is going to appreciate the highest. And so those are some of the things that led you to the short-term rental game. There are things that I love about the game as well, but it's not the path that leads a lot of people to short-term rentals, which is more that lifestyle vacation side of it. And you really unpacked it from kind of the, okay, it does this help me meet my life, like my long-term financial goals? And is this passive income vehicle going to be the vehicle that helps me get there faster and accelerate that progress? And so it's always I always find it really refreshing and interesting a lot of times when I talk to investors like yourself that are looking at all of those layers of that onion and help make them those decisions and choosing an asset class that works for them, because it's such an important decision on choosing that right passive income vehicle. And you've tried a couple other ones and ultimately didn't even think that they were going to want, you know, you thought you were going to lead more into the multifamily space and syndications and some of those bigger projects on that side. And it's interesting how everything kind of shook out to where you started running down the short-term rental road. And so for different reasons than bring a lot of other people there. And so where's home? So you mentioned you were investing in Columbus, outside of Columbus, but you said that was out of town. Where's home?
Yeah. So we live in San Francisco, California.
Yeah. So significantly farther away from where you guys are at right now. And so ultimately we started coming in and saying, okay, we have the properties in Columbus. And I don't think you didn't liquidate all of them all together, right? You have these properties and you started to say, hey, we're gonna explore this different asset class. We're gonna start to learn about that. So take us through navigating that now that you're kind of switching gears and saying, okay, we think there's some potential in this other asset class right now.
In 2022, we bought a fourplex in Columbus, Ohio. That was actually in, you know, one of the better locations in our portfolio. So it was a 4-unit property near Ohio State University. And so it had some long-term renters there in it when we bought the place. So we bought the place in the spring. There were students, so they were going to be leaving for the summer. So our plan was like, you know, as we were starting to explore short-term rentals, we were like, hey, this is going to be a pretty good short-term rental given where it is in this area. So that was kind of our first, you know, foot in the door for short-term rentals. We were like, you know, those tenants left in the fall. Actually, there was a little bit of like a glitch in the plan because the seller extended the leases for a couple of the tenants and didn't tell us. So we had to like wait a few extra months. But anyways, you know, we started renovating that. And then, you know, as we started to learn about the short-term rental space, I think there's kind of two different assets, broadly speaking, right? There's kind of your urban market short-term rentals, yeah, and there's your vacation rental. And those are two very different products, right? So, you know, one is kind of, I call it transactional sort of, right? Like, you know, people are coming to town for business, for a concert. They're coming for 3 or 4 days. They need a place to sleep, and you know, they'll look for a location. They might look for a nicer place than not, but like overall, they're really coming to the city for a reason, and they just need a place to sleep. Versus the vacation rental side of it is just completely different, right? It's very experiential. People are looking, you know, they're booking months in advance. They're looking with their entire family. They're making this big decision, and it might be like the highlight of their year, right? It's not just a place to sleep. So very different models. And so as we learned about that, I wanted to get more into that space, but it wasn't like a space that we were super familiar with. I think like the urban market, there's obviously a lot of carryover, right? Because we're already in that market. Just, you know, furnish a place, set it up and launch it on Airbnb versus, you know, vacation rental. It's like, well, what market do we choose? Like, how do we do this? And so that's where we started looking around for resources. And that's, you know, where we came to Vodacy in the fall of 2022.
Nice. Yeah. And I remember, you know, with the Columbus properties where you're there, you're like, okay, this fourplex can work as a short-term rental. And then navigating, where is that next market going to be for us? And, you know, you know, like, so it's quite far away, right? You guys are in San Francisco. let's walk people through, because this is a challenge that a lot of people have. And a lot of times, especially for investors like yourself that are, they're getting into the game, they're not buying it as more of a second home lifestyle asset where they're going to use it all the time, but they're navigating the best opportunities for themselves on as an investment, right? And so navigate, I'd love to have that conversation about how you guys navigated landing on Snowshoe.
You know, as you touched on, the property that we ended up buying next was in Snowshoe, West Virginia, which is a ski resort all the way on the other side of the country.
Yeah.
And I'd love to sort of say, like, hey, we had this, like, you know, whole systematic, like, process. We looked at, like, all of these markets and analyzed all of these factors and, like, came to Snowshoe, West Virginia. This is one of those sort of, you know, like, once you start doing things, the ball just kind of starts rolling and you kind of don't know where it's going to go, right? So we joined Bodicy and, like, I'm looking on AirDNA and, like, I took a screenshot and I posted it in the Facebook group that, you know, at the time it was like a Facebook group. And so, like, I posted it not asking a question about Snowshoe, the market. It just happened to be, like, I was just looking and I had a random AirDNA question, like, hey, help me do this. It just happened to have Snowshoe in the screenshot. I just posted it, wasn't interested in that market at all, didn't know anything about that market. And someone in the group was like, hey, I have a property there. Feel free to reach out to me if you want to know more. You know, Odyssey member James. So I reached out to him. We got on the phone, spent like an hour on the phone, like the day later. And then it's like, oh, he told me all this interesting stuff. Like, you know, it's a ski resort. It's an upside down ski resort. So, you know, like most ski resorts, like, the resort is at the bottom and you sort of take the gondola up, but here everything's at the top of the mountain. He told me like all of these things and I'm like, wow, this is like fascinating. I never knew this stuff. I never even heard of this market. So then, you know, the next step is to go on Zillow on that Friday night. And like, you know, it had only been a couple of weeks of looking at markets, but at that time in early 2022, there was pretty much no inventory in any market, right? And so like, it just happened to be that we looked on Zillow in Snowshoe. There were a handful of properties that were on the market. There just happened to be this geodesic dome that we sort of saw. There were a few other properties that we kind of looked at, like, oh, maybe that's a nice one. That looks like a nice little, you know, standard sort of log cabin. But like, we just saw this geodesic dome and we're like, wow, that is so cool. What is that? And like, you know, just one thing led to another. James put us in touch with his realtor and, you know, we got on the phone with the realtor like on Sunday. So like within the space of like, you know, posting on Thursday, talking to the realtor on like Sunday, it's just, you know, one thing led to another. So
yeah. And then you ultimately put that property under contract, which is a very unique property, which has its own advantages and draws. When somebody's looking at it, it does help us stand out, right? Talk to us a little bit about, because obviously you didn't just go in and knowing, you know, knowing you very well, you didn't just like go in and put an offer on the property. You ran specific numbers. You really looked into the like you said, what is that revenue potential? Is the juice going to be worth the squeeze? These are more expensive properties than you're buying on the B and C class properties in Columbus as long-term rentals. So you're like, okay, I'm going to put a lot into these properties. And so is it going to be worth it? And so, because I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what you felt like that upside potential was. And then, you know, you've owned it long enough now where you're more than a year in, and we'll talk a little bit about how that performance actually lined up.
You know, once we like saw the property, right, like then you sort of start doing all of the analysis and kind of backing into it, right? So we follow the process that you teach of, you know, sort of looking at things by percentile, looking at, you know, 75th percentile, 90th percentile, and kind of trying to triangulate where the property is going to fall in that range. And, you know, you kind of do all of the pluses and minuses of all the comps and your subject property. And like, how does this shake out? Like, well, this one has a better location because this one happened to be basically right across from the ski resort, happened to be walking distance because it's one of the first properties that were built on the on this mountain. You know, the ski resort opened in the 70s under the original owners at the time, and property started being built in the early 80s. So this happened to be like situated right at the top of the mountain. So the location was awesome. It was just about as big as any property that was there. So it's, you know, 7 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms. And, you know, it had all of those things. And then it had this sort of intangible, unique quality about it being a geodesic dome. And you know, you see a lot of domes on Airbnb, but oftentimes those are like these plastic domes or there are these like other types of structures, right? But this has all of the components of an actual house, has walls, floors, heating, electric, like it's a house. It just happens to be shaped like a dome and it's a large house. So just we started looking at other markets. We started looking at other properties, but like this one just sort of kept speaking to us. And I think there was, looking back on it now, I wouldn't say this like at the time. I think like what I've come to gather is if you're going to be operating, you know, near the top of the market, sometimes there's a little bit of an intuitive sense that you have to kind of go off of as well. And we didn't have that intuition. We didn't have any experience as short-term rental investors or operators at that time, right? But I spent so much time pre-purchase and even post-purchase that first year, just sort of looking at all the comps and sort of saying like, well, you know, can this property do this? Can this property do that? Like there was an intuitive sense that like, hey, this property could kind of perform off the charts from where all the data suggests that this market maxes out. Of course, you don't necessarily want to make an investment decision purely on a gut feel, right? Yeah. I think you kind of want to look and say like, if I do the analysis, is this a profitable property? Just, you know, based on sort of running the numbers objectively and dispassionately. But then you kind of want to have a little bit of that upside, right? Which is what makes short-term rentals so much fun. It's that it isn't like a long-term rental where the rent is, you know, $1,350 and that's exactly what you're going to get. There is this kind of fun sort of upside that you get to play with. You get to lock in some profitability, but with the potential for a lot more.
That revenue potential is what I believe is so fun as well, because like you've heard me talk about this with our group and outside of our group, is it's like you and I can have a property right next door to each other, same area, essentially the same properties. And if they were long-term rentals, we'd be getting essentially the same rent, right? But as a short-term rental, we have a lot of different potential based on what we decide to do, how we decide to deliver it, how we articulate it. There's all these different elements to a short-term rental that allow us to go capture our unfair share of business, is what I call it.
I like to say that, you know, long-term rentals, you're playing defense, right? Your tenant, if your rent is $1,350, they're never going to say, hey, I had a great month in your property this month, I'm going to send you $1,450.
Yeah.
Your rent is capped and you're basically just trying to manage your expenses and net out as much as possible, right? You're trying not to lose money on expenses. Whereas in short-term rentals, you get to play offense. You get to play the opposite game. You get to say like, what can I invest in this property? Like, how can I take better photos from a different angle? How can I invest in these amenities and really play offense and say like, how can I take this revenue from this to this? And that's really sort of the creative fun. Yeah. On short-term rentals.
I love it. Yeah. It's one of the funnest parts for me in this asset class as well. And so take me through, like, let's talk a little bit about the performance. If there was any hiccups, any adjustments we made, like talk to us about the performance on that first year of ownership.
Yeah. So I would say like the first year of getting it launched and the first few months were honestly a disaster. Like 2022. So, you know, we had this long-term rental that we were working on renovating. We bought this geodesic dome in West Virginia, kind of a rural place, like way out 3,000 miles on the other side of the country. And at the same time, we're doing a full rehab on our personal residence here in San Francisco as well. So we had three full rehabs in three different states. And, you know, Sonam, my wife, she got pregnant. You know, we got pregnant in July of that year. So all of this is happening. We're trying to launch these properties, do a renovation on our personal home, move my parents across the country from Maryland to San Francisco. So all of this stuff is going on. And, you know, we were kind of like racing towards that December 31st finish line, right? To get both properties launched so we could get the tax benefits, material participation and depreciation write-offs. And so I think to say that it was a stressful time would be an understatement, because we're displaced from our house as well while this is happening, because our contractors didn't communicate, hey, you're not going to have plumbing or electricity for 2 months. So it was just kind of a scramble drill. And when we managed to launch the dome in Snowshoe, the week between Christmas and New Year's, we got two bookings right away and we were like, okay, awesome. Great. Like it worked out. But the second guest that we had, they sent us a message after they checked in and they're like, hey, when we get in the hot tub, we're feeling like an electric shock of some sort. And so both Sonam and I are like freaking out. We're like, do not get in the hot tub.
Right.
And so like the week between Christmas and New Year's, it was kind of a scramble drill trying to figure out like what was happening. And so it was like managing those guest expectations, like, hey, you know, I'm really sorry, don't use the hot tub. The next couple of guests after that, we had our electrician, we had the electrical company come out. Long story short, there was something faulty in the electrical company's equipment, leading to like 60 volts of ungrounded current running through the property. And it was all, 60 volts and water, needless to say, is a pretty dangerous combination. So yeah, it was kind of a disaster. And like, even when we launched, the property wasn't fully finished. You know, we finished like the main level and the upstairs level, but the basement wasn't done. We were only renting half the house. We were renting a sleeping capacity of 9 rather than a capacity of 15. So, you know, we kind of were half online, half offline in the wintertime. We're trying to rent it. We're trying to do some work on the basement at the same time. In hindsight, I think you kind of have to know what the peak seasonality of your market is. And like, if a place is ready or not ready, I think like, you know, it kind of behooves you just to sort of knowing now how much more profitable the winter is compared to the off season, just having a property that's live the entire winter, even if it's only half the property, would have been better than like, you know, taking the property like offline all the time throughout the winter. So anyways, we got to the end of March, ski season ended. So that first 3.5 months, we did about 35,000 in bookings that winter, half the property. It was offline half the winter time. And then, you know, we got to April and we're kind of like licking our wounds, trying to figure out where to go next. We knew we had some more upgrades that we wanted to make on the property. But yeah, we were just offline for like April and May while trying to lick our wounds and figure out like what our game plan is. And so, you know, we finally opened up the calendar sometime in like mid-May for the spring and the summer season. And we got like a couple of bookings. But like, honestly, like the calendar was pretty dry at that point. So like, I always knew like Snowshoe was going to work out in the wintertime because it's a winter market, right? But the questions were always about like the off season. Well, what can properties actually do? All we heard going in was like, hey, no one comes to Snowshoe in like April and May. Summer is, you know, it's very light. October and November, it's pretty much dead. No property like, you know, has any bookings at all after like mid October until like, you know, Thanksgiving, like the mountain is just completely dead. So in one of our weekly calls, you know, this is where the calendar was pretty empty after 2 or 3 weeks of opening it. And, you know, I was sort of looking for advice on like how to maximize property and like how to get it going again. And I knew we had some work planned, but, you know, your suggestions were really helpful around one, getting higher quality photos. Cause I think like in our head, we knew how cool the place looked. But like, right, the photos that we had weren't really reflecting how awesome the place was that we saw in person. And then the other part of it was, I think, just sort of guest education. It seems so obvious in hindsight. You know, your suggestion was have photos that sell what the area is all about. What is there to do around the property, right? Because you kind of assume people that are looking at a property in this market know what there is to do in that market, in that area. But that's not necessarily the case, right? Like, they're coming, they're looking at properties, Airbnb, VRBO, they're suggesting properties all over the place. And that person doesn't really kind of know, right? So those photos are kind of like they're like your hook. The initial photo is like your hook. And then the rest of the photos are kind of what keeps them drawn in, right?
Yeah. And it's, I remember that conversation when you were like, hey, we're, you know, winter was okay. You know, we kind of got the property put back together and how we want it now, you know, but the calendar's empty. And one of my favorite parts about that our weekly coaching call that we were on, and you jumped on, you asked the questions, we went through that and we said, yeah, listen, we need to articulate what we have to offer better. And we also need to articulate what there is to do in the summertime, right? We're still showing winter photos and we're trying to book in June, July, August. And we need to show them the other things to do in the area. And there was mountain biking, there was concerts, and you guys were right next to the resort area where they have events and things like that. And so I'm like, let's do a better job of articulating that. And one of my, and I tell this story all the time, Harmon, and it's a credit to your diligence and taking action and go and roll up your sleeves. It was a week later, you came back to the coaching call and the property looked completely different, right? It was like, I mean, it was like instant where you took that action. You went in, you were saying, hey, listen, we're going to add these area photos. We're going to start to articulate what we have better. You went to I don't know if you actually went out there or if you just hired the photographer and gave him really good instructions on exactly how to put together the lifestyle photo shoot. But at the end of the day, you went and took action really, really quickly so that you could try to maximize and say, okay, you know, at the end of the day, what I love about when, you know, as a coach, what I love is when somebody is like, hey, if I'm not going to succeed, it's not going to be because of me. I'm going to do everything I can to stack the odds in my favor to help me maximize this asset. And you're not going to blame anything or anybody else on that. And so you took the advice, you took action, you put it into play. And ultimately, What happened after that?
We got the new photos. So actually on the photos, so we didn't go out there, but this is where, you know, like being a part of Odyssey was super helpful because, you know, you're working in a rural place and like, you're not necessarily going to get a photographer that's familiar with lifestyle yes. photography. So like, you know, there's a local photographer out there who's really talented, does a lot of, you know, a lot of weddings, a lot of nature photography, but he sort of doesn't know how to tell the story of a vacation rental and the experience therein, right? So like, you know, would have loved to have overlooked the overbooked fly out, but because we were kind of doing work throughout the summer, we kind of needed someone that could just be there. Like every time we, you know, complete another part of the house,
yes.
we could get more photos taken. And so going through the course and seeing all of the suggestions from overlooked to overbooked, I took a lot of those suggestions, distilled those down into various recommendations for the photographer, but even more so, like I went through all of the top properties in the Vodacy portfolio, your Cherry Log property, a few of the other ones, and sort of looked at those photos as examples of like, hey, you know, this is how to photograph a hot tub, right? Like, yeah. you know, put a drink like this, you know, sort of showcase the hot tub being in use, not just taking a picture of like a hot tub just sitting there in the backyard. Yeah. Here's how to take a photo of a fireplace, put some drinks next to the fireplace, put some charcuterie. So had, you know, like a slideshow of, you know, 12 or 13 different like photos of like how to capture different parts of the property. So it was very sort of prescriptive for him to be able to follow, like, this is exactly the angle that I want of this aspect of the property.
Yeah. And so you got that, pulled it off. And talk to me about a little bit about the performance since that. And then also like, how was it during the, you know, the summer, the fall, some of those times that everybody says, hey, nobody's here, the mountain's dead. Like how did our performance look after we made that adjustment?
Yeah. So we got the photos, was excited to like, you know, get them on Airbnb and VRBO right away, put the photos up. For a week, nothing happened. Every day, I'm just sort of waiting for those bookings. And then I'm like, you know, maybe snowshoe doesn't work in the, maybe, you know, doesn't work in the summertime at all, I guess, you know, was sort of bummed for that week. You know, when you're like eagerly anticipating something and it doesn't happen, right? Like it's hugely disappointing. But like the following Sunday, 1 week after we put the photos up, Sonam and I are getting ready to go somewhere and like a booking comes on the phone, right? And this is where like short-term rentals can be so fun, right? Getting those booking notifications, getting those review notifications. So I'm like, hey, like a booking just came in and we're like, awesome. 15 minutes go by, another booking comes in. We're like, wow, that's awesome. Half an hour goes by, another booking comes in. And then like, you know, within the space of another half an hour, like a fourth booking came in that day. So I think it just sort of took time for the photos. You know, it's the way that people make decisions on vacations, right? It's not like instantaneous. It's not yes. like, hey, I need to go to Columbus. I need like a one bedroom place to sleep. You get a lot of last minute bookings. People need to see the property. They need to run it by their, you know, their family and friends. They're like, hey, check out this place that I found in this market, right? So yeah, things just started snowballing from there. So we had 8 bookings within that second week and 30 bookings total for the summer. So yeah, just 15 bookings in the next month. So $30,000 worth of bookings just that came in within 30 days of getting that photo shoot done. So $600 photo shoot, plus I paid the photographer $100 to pick up drinks and charcuterie to put out there. So $700 invested for a $30,000 return. So that's, you know, pretty good.
Not a bad ROI, right? So that's, and I love hearing that story. I love, you know, I love more than like sometimes like just the fact that you had to go through that process to understand that, hey, listen, we're falling flat a little bit. We're not, you know, we're not attracting the right guests. We're not getting the bookings. We make some adjustments and then ultimately we see the results from that. And it's really fun to be able to see that because we get, what I think it does is it reinforces the action that you've taken, right? It reinforces the behavior of, hey, listen, if we're struggling, don't point fingers. Let's figure out what we can do on our side to try to figure out how we can maximize this asset. And it starts to reinforce that. So you're like, now you've got the confidence. If there is other hiccups, which there will be, there's ups and downs in any business that we play and anything that we're doing. But now you've got some momentum, but the next hiccup you have, you're going to be more likely to say, hey, what action can I take instead of sitting there saying, oh, the market's bad. You know, things have changed. Or they told me it was going to be really bad in the summer and the fall. And you proved otherwise, right? You proved that, hey, listen, this can be a really attractive property when, you know, if we dial everything in, and it does take a little while to dial in. It's not uncommon. I always tell people, give yourself a good 12, 18 months before you really feel like you're hitting your full stride. You know, 6 to 9 months during that launch phase, of just saying, hey, listen, I've got to really dial this in and figure it out, make the necessary adjustments. And so we've got, you're rushing, you bought the property, you're rushing to get it online by the end of the year in the first winter season. So we're rolling out of your actual second winter season, the full winter season. And so how was which is your peak season? How was your first ultimately full winter season?
Yeah. So actually, before I go into the winter, just one more thing to add on the photos, right? On the attraction photos, the guests that we have in the wintertime. So, you know, every time there's a booking, you know, the automated message that goes out is something along the lines of like, you know, it has what brings you guys to Snowshoe? Have you guys been to Snowshoe? And in the winter, we get messages that are like, oh, you know, this is our fourth year coming to Snowshoe, or we go skiing every year and we look for, you know, we normally go to this resort, but, you know, we always wanted to try Snowshoe. There's a high level of familiarity that people have with Snowshoe and like why they're coming there. But in the summertime, most of the messages, I would say, people are like, oh, we've never been, or, you know, what's there to do? Or like, you know, do you have recommendations for us? Right. And so like that really helped me understand that advice that you gave about the area and the attraction photos, because you think you have a potential buyer, a potential booker that is familiar with, you know, not just, you know, with the area that you're operating in, but they're really not, right? They're just looking for a good experience. And it's your job, once you've got their attention, once you've got their hook, it's your job to keep that attention and to sort of, you know, basically, it's like a longer sales cycle, right? You just need to sort of capture their attention and then, you know, convince them throughout that entire process. And sometimes they might send you messages, and, you know, as soon as you respond a couple of times, they end up booking.
And it's such a great point to put an exclamation point on, is that, and it's so true. And it's so natural that people think, well, they're already looking here. They must know what they want to come to do. Right. And it is, as long as we've been in the business, it's one of the biggest mistakes I think that investors make or hosts make, is they're not articulating everything there is to do in the area, because it is absolutely not true that when somebody is looking in an area, they know all the different things and all the fun things to do in the area. They're coming to experience the area. The more that you can articulate that, we assume only thing we need to articulate is our property. And that's not true. We need to articulate all those great things that people can enjoy and experience in the area. And that ultimately is going to just raise your listing, optimize that listing, and raise you up in the ranks. When they do make a decision to book, they're gonna be like, man, I really like Harmon's property, because one, he knows all the stuff about the area, and it got me really excited about it. And so then they get hooked in.
That whole off season, even though we were offline like a bunch, doing some renovations and stuff, we ended up pulling in 60,000 of bookings. And so definitely exceeded our expectations there. And, you know, we pretty much had a booking for every weekend in September, every weekend in October. We had a cancellation or two in November, but we had a booking on the calendar at one point or another for like every weekend in November when people say, you know, no one's coming. We had weekdays that were booking in October and November. People are like, hey, we're coming from DC and we just want to, you know, hang out with our friends for like a week or something, right? So there might not be many people coming to a market, but you always say get your unfair share of bookings, right? Are a lot of people coming to Snowshoe in the middle of the week in November? No. But if your property is the property that stands out, the handful of people that are coming, they're going to be inclined to stay at your place.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Yep. It might slow way down, which is the reality, right? And like what people are telling you advice wise makes a lot of sense. It does slow down. But like you said, to get your unfair share of business, if you've got a top property that does stand out in a crowd, the few people that are coming, your likelihood of getting booked is high.
There is one thing that can make or break your success with short-term rentals, and that's your ability to provide your guests with an amazing night's rest. We're taking all of the guesswork out of selecting the perfect mattress system. Personally, I have these custom mattresses in every one of my short-term rentals. We love them so much that we even got them in our own personal homes here in Utah. So visit VodiceySleepSystem.com and use the promo code PODCAST. It's all caps at checkout to get 55% off.
And then the wintertime exceeded our expectations as well. So, you know, we, in the summertime, we added a fire pit, just upgraded our photos, just sort of upgraded the experience overall. And so going into the wintertime, I was projecting 125,000 in bookings. Just sort of went through, you know, did the numbers, you know, what's the ADR, what's the occupancy that we can get. And just sort of doing the math, it kind of shook out to like 125,000. And I was like, you know, that just seems too high. Like, is that really possible? You know, that would mean we need to do like, you know, 40,000 a month in like, you know, December and January and like February. Like, that just seems too high. And so it was kind of fun throughout the fall to watch those bookings come in and to sort of watch, you know, just just watch the calendar fill up. And like, I put that number out there as kind of a goal, but in the back of my mind, I was like, even though like, just sort of looking at all the numbers, I was like, this is where the math works out. It felt too good to sort of believe until we got to like about 90,000 in bookings, like, you know, by the end of November. And I was like, okay, I think 125,000 is reasonable. But really the number that I had in the back of my mind was like, actually, if you run all of these numbers, really it gets you to 150, but there was no way like I was willing to believe that like it could actually pull in like 50,000 a month. And so that is basically where we ended up being. I think it's, you know, 151 or 152,000 in bookings for the winter time.
For the winter season. Congrats, man. It's awesome. And it's well-deserved. You guys know that listening to this show on a regular basis, that we post the properties in the show notes so you guys can go check out Harmon and Sonam's property and check it out to say, because I always say success leaves clues. And so go check this out. And it's a well-deserved, you know, that success that you're seeing, it was not without making the adjustments, the necessary adjustments, rolling up your sleeve, saying, okay, what do we need to do here? And because like you said, you felt like that first year was kind of like, holy crap, we're like drinking of a fire hose. We're trying to figure this out. There's a lot going on. We're not dialing everything that we need to dial in. There's just, you know, it feels like you said in the beginning, it felt like kind of a disaster in the beginning. And then ultimately, you know, you get through that launch, you make the adjustments, you start to get some momentum in the summertime and the fall when everybody said it's dead. And that momentum carried into the wintertime and you have a record season, right? And it's at a time when a lot of people are saying that the markets have shifted and this is not, you're not having a record season during the COVID era when everybody was making money, right? You guys are really dialing it in a time when a lot of people aren't getting their unfair share of business. And so, you know, it's really exciting to see. And so those of you who are listening, make sure you check out the listing because And I always say, try to reverse engineer some of the things that we're talking about and looking at. And you can make some of these same adjustments if you own properties and being able to operate toward the top of the market. And so Harmon, this has been a really fun conversation and I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you being able to share kind of the ups and the downs of, you know, some of the things that went right, some of the things that went wrong, because that's our goal here at the Vacation Rental Revolution and at Vodacy is to help people walk into this game with their eyes wide open. And so, at the end of every episode, I always like to pause for a minute and have you guys like reflect and say, okay, if you give yourself some advice going back, you know, 5-10 years from now or before now, and saying, if I could give myself a piece of advice from what I know now, what I learned now, diving into this game, what would that be? Is there something that comes to mind on what you would give yourself as far as advice diving into this, the short-term rental game?
I knew this question was coming, but it, you know, it's still it's a great question, but it's a tough one because you only know now what you know because you sort of went through everything, right? But if you could rewind the clock, I think like what I realized, like short-term rentals are, it's a really fun asset class, but the difference between the 75th and the 90th percentile, and then even between the 90th and the 95th percentile is insane, right? Like 75th percentile is basically more or less breaking even. So you really need to figure out how to get to that 90th percentile and really try to figure out how you can get to the near the top of the market. And that's all upside at that point. So if you're going to get into short-term rentals, I would say get in with the intention of just really learning the game, really trying to operate at the top of the market. It's just a lot more fun that way.
Yeah, that is. I love that. And I actually really, I've never had that answer. And I 100% buy in and believe it is, when you said, you know, it's hard because if I didn't go through that, if I didn't experience some of the ups and downs, I wouldn't know what I know now. And I wouldn't be in a position to continue to expand from where I'm at right now. And I totally believe that. And I love the advice of get in with the intention to learn and maximize and with the goal to operate toward the top. And a lot of times that just comes by rolling up your sleeves and going through those experiences and learning along the way so that you're in a position down the line to continue to grow, to continue to expand. And so I love that answer. And so, and couldn't agree with it more. And it's one of the, I think that's the first time I've had that answer. So I appreciate that, Harmon. That's awesome. So guys, we are going to wrap this one up. And this has been a really, really fun conversation for me. It's been a really fun to be kind of on the sidelines as part of your journey and watching you guys take action, roll up your sleeves and go through and making those adjustments, Harmon. It's been really fun for me. I hope that you guys enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. And I always appreciate you spending your time with us. We know how valuable your time is, and it's important for us that you spend it with us. And we appreciate that. And at the end of every episode, you guys know I ask you two favors. if you like this show and you know somebody else that might like the show that's getting into the short-term rental game, wants to walk in with their eyes wide open, share the show. Those things do help us. And then obviously, if you're whatever platform you're listening or watching on, reviews, likes, shares, all those things help us. And so we always appreciate that. If you have more than 30 seconds, give us a written review on what you like to see on these shows and what you like about it. We read those and we try to take feedback from them. So, and then that final thing that I always ask you, and I always challenge you at the end of every episode, is to go pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.